Second hour of Darren and Donick here on this Thursday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are in our Wholesale Link Game Studios today. Weather is headed that way. We think it's going to plop down on Titans training camp.
And it may not.
It may not. It may not. But we decided to head for shelter just in case. But we still will talk with Titans GM John Robinson in the third hour when practice concludes, and also Titans running back Derrick Henry. We say hello to Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. The fantasy marathon is complete. Tim, when I turned on, you were eating wings and telling Matthew Berry to go write stories and get away.
Well, listen, and if that's the case, that means you were still awake at like 1 in the morning.
It was, well, it was 1 Eastern. It would have been, close to midnight our time. Yeah.
Either way, it was past your bedtime and mine, I think, at that point, yes.
So how did it go? What did you think?
Listen, I feel like the nice thing about the fantasy first of all, let me say this. There's a lot of hands on deck when they do that. So all the people behind the scenes at ESPN that helped put on that fantasy marathon and all the different games and, you know, different things that we do throughout the day, they put a ton of work into it and do a really good job. And then, you know, I think the other benefit, I guess, for, you know, maybe the viewers is, you know, you get a chance to see some of the people that you typically see on ESPN in a very different role. I mean, you know, Adam Schefter does a good job of kind of having some fun sometimes, but you see a little bit more of his personality as he's drafting a fantasy team, or Lewis Riddick, the same thing, or whether it was my brother or Diana Rossini or, you know, people like that. So, I think in that regard, it ends up being a pretty cool thing that ESPN has done the last couple of years.
How's Adam's thumb?
You know, Adam's thumb, like, that was a real thing. I was talking to him in the break, you know, shortly after that happened, and he's like, no, you have no idea how much that hurt. Like, that really hurt. And I was like, what a dangerous, you know, I mentioned all the people that are working to kind of set that up and, you know, produce the segments and that type of thing. I mean, it was like, it's like all hands on deck. Now, part of the issue with that, and then they told everybody, they were like, look, here's the deal. Your mic is always open and the camera is always running, like even in breaks. So just be ready. And sure enough, like on the second or third break, you know, there goes Schefter, you know, trying to scoot his chair in, and he, you know, smashes his thumb on the table.
Don't mean to laugh, but, you know, I just laughed.
Well, listen, I was on the phone with Mort in one of the breaks, and I was like, hey, we need you to call in with some type of report on Schefter's thumb and that he's, you know, probable for week one.
How were the wings, by the way? Were you faking it, or were they actually good?
No, so that, man, I'm forgetting his name now. Isn't that terrible? The chef.
The chef of, that was there, yeah.
So he's been there a couple times. Adam Amin, who was the host of that segment, has worked with him a number of times, and he's incredible. The stuff this year was outstanding. The thing that he made last year he did this thing called trash can nachos, okay, where basically you fill up this, you know how it would be like a Campbell's Chunky Soup can? It was like that, only the size of like a paint can, okay?
Okay.
You know, like a gallon of paint. And what you do is you fill it up, okay? You fill it up with, you know, nachos and cheese and, you know, jalapenos and meats and that type of thing. You fill it up and you tip it over and then you just lift it up, lift the can up, and it's called trash can nachos. He did that last year. Like, I'm not a real big foodie, but I can tell you, I thought about it every day pretty much since maybe last year. You know,
that,
and look,
means
I'm
it's
not
good.
Quite a 5 milkshake guy, okay? We've established that, all right? So that's a big deal for me.
I've got to get your thoughts on a Nashvillian who happens to play down in Jacksonville, but Jalen Ramsey's comments. He's had an interesting week. He went after the media when there was a scuffle at Jags training camp, which I think is a big no-no. He's very, very good, as we've talked about. He may be already the best corner in the league, but now he's gone after every quarterback. I just want to know, how does Tim Hasselbeck feel about this? And now I want you to put yourself in either Doug Marrone or Tom Coughlin's shoes,
okay,
and how should they handle it?
Yeah, I think in terms of the way I feel about it is this, like, you know, it's laughable that he's going to criticize somebody like Matthew Stafford, who's accomplished what Matthew Stafford has accomplished as a player.
What about Matt Ryan?
Right. That's what I mean. And Matt Ryan and, look, Eli Manning. And, I mean, it's just like, so it's one of those things where it's obviously in bad taste. You're certainly not making any friends with it. And the reality is, and, you know, maybe he's too immature to understand it at this point, but the reality is that, like, look at Richard Sherman. You may not play your entire career in one spot. And your quarterback may not always be Blake Bortles. His chance to get a Super Bowl ring one day might be when Matthew Stafford is a cash casualty, a cap casualty, and ends up becoming the starting quarterback for, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, it just is, it's one of those things where, and look, people will forget and people kind of understand that guys do this type of thing, but, like, I will say that I don't think anybody around the league, or at least I should probably say, I think the majority of guys around the league don't respect that. You know, like, guys don't respect that. They might think he's a good player and respect his game, but when guys do that, people don't respect that. If I'm Doug Marrone and Tom, and really to be honest with you, I think the guy that was probably insulted the most was Blake Bortles. Like, we don't want to hurt his confidence by going against us. I thought the way that he talked about Bortles, he thought that he was maybe paying him a compliment and at the same time complimenting that defense, but it was a brutal shot at Blake Bortles. Like, and in fact, kind of embarrassing for Bortles. So yeah,
we never go against him unless it's training camp. We never go against them in practice during the season.
And he continued on because he didn't want to affect his confidence.
Yeah.
that was the worst insult of them all. You know, sometimes you're like,
backhanded.
Hey, you're trash. Yeah, it was the worst. Right? And it was almost like he wasn't smart enough to realize what he was doing in the process. So if I'm Coughlin or Doug Marrone, I'm just explaining to him, like, look, you can't, like, that's a bad idea. That doesn't help us. And so I think between that, some of the stuff in the, you know, it's not like his past is perfect. And then, you know, this situation with the reporters, which is, I mean, again, it's just kind of a maturity thing or just a lack of, you know, awareness, you know, of what you're doing. So, here's the one thing I would say, and you can pretty much apply it to any corner that's ever played. And the same thing goes for guys that cover kickoffs. Like, it's good. It's good. It's easier to be good for 1 or 2 years at that position. But then once everybody starts studying you and figuring out what you like to do and what you don't like to do, it's hard to stay at the top. That's why, you know, Champ Bailey, it's going to be, you know, a quick run into the Hall of Fame for Champ Bailey. But, guys, everyone was talking about Darrelle Revis and maybe being a Hall of Famer. I don't think it's true. The guy doesn't have 30 interceptions. Like, he had a nice little quick run of it, but it's hard to be the best in the game at corner for a really long time. And so there's going to be some moments for Jalen Ramsey in his career that are going to be embarrassing. And so I would just, if I were him and I was advising him, I would just say, listen, play with confidence, but be careful now.
That's
you're going to get embarrassed.
That's a great point about the quarterback carousel and a player's journey might have some of these guys meeting down there. I hadn't thought about that. Let me give you a different one to comment on, a different angle, Tim, because you always hear coaches and players saying, just block out the noise. You know, don't, because at the end of the day, these comments, and he made a comment on just about everybody. You go down the list, there's 50 guys he's talking about, and really, what does it mean? But I'm just curious, an article like that, I would bet in training camp, probably made the rounds in different locker rooms. But what is the reaction when somebody pops off like that? What is the discussion like in the locker room? Not even in the Jaguars locker room. I'm talking about maybe just pick one, because he talked about just about everybody.
Yeah, I think it's mostly an eye roll, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Like, we've all probably been on teams before where it's like, you know, everyone kind of, you know, brings it in and some guy is talking and it's, you know, and half the team is rolling their eyes because that guy's talking, you know, whereas there are other guys, like, when they talk, you know, everybody's listening and paying attention. And so, Look, I think generally speaking, it's probably like a, you know, an eye roll around the league. And then I think the guys that he insulted, you know, end up, I mean, listen, we're everyone's human. They end up not liking him, you know, and not that he's looking for friends, but look, he's created enemies is what he's done. And I don't know that that's always, you know, a great method.
And he's created maybe guys to want to maybe stick it to him when they play him. I mean, he's giving them motivation.
Look, there's no question. If you are, you know, a team that, you know, the quarterback, you know, he insulted the quarterback, right?
Andrew Luck's going to see him twice this year.
Yeah, and isn't that so? And so say there's somebody that's on that team that really likes Andrew and feels like, you know what, man, like, forget you saying that stuff about him. Like, and you have a shot on a guy. Like, I guess just what I'm saying is it's like, it's one of those, listen, and maybe he wants the bullseye. Maybe he does. But what I'm saying is, like, when you have the bullseye, sometimes what you're able to do is use what a guy does really well against him. So I'll give you a quick example. Richard Sherman was the best in the league. He was running his mouth. Well, one of the things people learned about Richard Sherman is when he ran in-breaking routes, he was like, nah, I'm good, man. I don't feel like running in there. Well, like, so after a while, they figured it out on Richard Sherman. And I was like, stop testing him on go routes. He's too long and he's got good speed to be testing him on go routes. So what everyone started doing was testing him on in-breaking routes. And all of a sudden, he wasn't the same guy anymore. And so I think part of what happens is, you know, Jalen Ramsey is a great player, but he's not great at everything. And there are certain things that, you know, people are going to start to learn about what he does and doesn't do well in some of his tendencies. And all of a sudden, he's not so dominant. Go ask Darrelle Revis. The same thing happened.
When we come back, the Titans and the Bucs are practicing. Mike Vrabel had some comments about his quarterback. We'll get Tim's perspective on that and more on the other side. Tim Hasselbeck on Darren and Donick, 102.5 The Game.
Now, I'm not going to go, you know, really into where I feel like the ranking scale is for assertiveness or leadership. And I think that it's important that he leads this football team and leads the offense that makes him comfortable. You know what I mean? Everybody has to do what they believe in their heart and how they're raised and what their personality is. And so we're not going to make anybody around here be something that what they're not. We're just going to try to maximize everybody's potential. Taywan and Taylor and Ben, you know what I mean? They all have different personalities. He clearly, you know, with comparing Ben Jones and Josh Klein, they line up 2 feet next to each other and they're probably as different as you could be between a center and a guard. But they line up and they get their job done, and then they've been effective doing it.
Head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday after the Titans and Bucks practice. Back here on Darren and Donick. Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN with us. There were more clips. Look, you don't get much from the head coach, but he did go down that road yesterday, and Willie and I talked about it out at training camp, and just my perspective on what he was trying to say is he wants maybe Mariota not to go out of his comfort zone, not to not be himself, but maybe assert himself a little bit more. Look, the way I look at it, he's not saying we need you to be a table flipper or we need you to be Tom Brady barking and screaming. But it does sound like he wants, because Marcus is very laid back. Look, I had this discussion, Tim, with Matt LaFleur. I said, tell us something we don't know, because all we see is a guy that's pretty quiet and reserved. Yeah, he looks like a competitor, which is great, but what is he like behind the scenes? And so what did you take from that? And what do you think is the right balance for the quarterback to have?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, in terms of Mike Vrabel's comments, I actually loved Mike Vrabel's comments. I think too often times somebody, you know, gets a job as a head coach, and chances are they got their job as a head coach because they were coming from somewhere that had success, which means that quarterback, you know, had done well. And so they get to the new place, and so it's a different quarterback than the guy that they, you know, than the guy where they were that had success. But they want that guy to be exactly like the other quarterback. But they're not the same person. They don't play the same. They don't have the same personality. They don't have the same demeanor. And I think that's one of the things you could do wrong is to think, oh, hey, listen, Tom Brady, he's always screaming and yelling at people. That's what we need Marcus to do, you know? Well, I think that's the wrong approach. I'll give you my personal experience with that is at the Giants, Eli Manning was being criticized, I think, probably much harder, but for the same things that I think people have been critical of Marcus for, in that, well, he seems like a nice guy. We know he works hard. We know he's trying hard. We know he cares. But, like, we don't see that fire, and we don't see him, you know, for Eli, much like his brother, yelling at the wide receiver when he runs the wrong route. And for the longest time, it drove Tom Coughlin nuts. And I think I've told you this, you guys, this before. Like, I would get called into Coughlin's office because, Eli and I are close. And he'd be like, what do we need to do to get him to scream and yell and come out of his shell and, be more assertive and take charge more? And look, my thing was, that's not him. And with the mix of guys that we have on our offense, we don't need him to do that. We have other guys that are doing that. And so I kind of see the Titans in a similar way. Listen, Taylor Lewan is not afraid to be vocal and yell. And if guys are jumping off sides or committing penalties or whatever, I don't think he's going to be, quick to bite his tongue to yell at somebody. And I think people respect him. And so then I think when you look at Marcus, he doesn't need to be that guy. He might need to be the guy that steadies the ship when, everybody is kind of going a million miles an hour and looking for some type of guidance.
So you're okay with kind of him just being him, and if him being him is, look, he has the room. He has the respect. He's a competitor.
Correct.
So those are two gigantic check marks, but he's really quiet
and
reserved.
Let me ask you something. If he started acting in a way that was not authentic, do you think he would still have the room?
Well, to answer your question, probably not. But this is where I think Mike Vrabel is going with this, and you tell me because you've been in there. I think he's wanting him to maybe take a little bit more ownership. In other words, look, that play isn't working. Let's get away from that. Let's do this type of stuff.
Look, I will say, okay, that's a great example. One of the things that happened at the Giants, and it was one of the conversations I had with Eli, is we had a couple of plays that Kevin Gilbride loved calling. And they're good plays. When you draw them up and the success that people had running those plays in the NFL, they were proven to work, and they were good plays. We weren't good at them at the Giants, whether it was the guys we had running the routes, the quarterback throwing, whatever it was. We weren't good at it. And the thing I said to Eli, and I think I believe it was probably Chris Palmer, who was a quarterback coach at the time, he wanted to impress on Eli at the time, was, look, if you're the one that has to run it, so if you don't like it, tell us, and we won't call it. We had to say that to him, and he started to kind of become more vocal about that stuff. And maybe they want Marcus to do that, but, we don't know if he's not. I actually did not read it as Mike Vrabel asking for Marcus to change. Now, I think he always wants his quarterback, who guys on the team respect, to show leadership in every way possible. But I did not read that as a, hey, we need Marcus to do more in a leadership area. I didn't take it that way at all.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We're talking NFL. He is with ESPN. Tim, of all the rookie quarterbacks, this is the annual thing we have here. You see all the clips from their first games and everything like that. Who has caught your attention the most so far?
Well, I think based on their first performance, Sam Darnold had the best first outing. When you look at Lamar Jackson, a lot of stuff Lamar Jackson has done well is the running around, and I think we all know kind of where that leads. I think it's the, what guys do as a passer that, really, I think, catches my eye, especially early on for a player. And so, not to say that other guys haven't done well. Baker Mayfield had a good outing as well. The two touchdown passes he throws, I think, I've seen guys not make those plays. And so, you should be applauded for that. I thought Josh Allen, surprisingly, because his physical tools are so good, I think is a really good shot. We end up seeing him early, which is not what I originally would have projected. But Sam Darnold's command of what they were doing offensively, having an answer, because Atlanta had come after him a decent amount and blitzed some of their protections, and I thought he handled that really well.
Okay, now we're going to take your 24 hours of fantasy research and talk. I want to boil it down to, let's say, one or two points. If there is one tip, because Darren has his first draft this weekend. I mean, he's going at it. Right now, I'm still preliminary. Preliminary stages here. I'd like to evaluate all the preseason before I really get down into the details here. But one or two fantasy themes that you think are worth putting out there above all else right now.
Okay, and then I'm going to flip it on you since you guys are at practice today, seeing a couple things. Okay,
is that
fair?
Can
we do that? Okay, all right. So here's what I would say. Obviously, there's always a running back every year where it's like, oh, you can think about Alvin Kamara last year, right? Like, so.
And by the way, which way are we going? Is it Kamara or Kamara? It changes
Kamara.
Every week.
I asked him. He said like Kamara.
Okay. That's what we'll go with then.
I think Kerryon Johnson in Detroit is an interesting guy. It's a really good offense. He's a versatile player. They have a crowded backfield, but they could end up trying to trade Amir Abdullah or something like that. Theo Riggs is going to get his catches and stuff, but I think like he's a really good upside flyer. I think the other guy at that position is Marlon Mack. I mean, you guys remember Marlon Mack last year. He's actually a very good player. And they weren't great last year. And I feel like all of these Colts players have kind of been underrated because no one really knew if Andrew Luck was going to be healthy or not. So everyone's kind of hedged their feeling on T.Y. Hilton or Jack Doyle or Eric Ebron or Marlon Mack or some of those guys. So that's what I would say there. Now, the thing I think that so many people are talking about and they really don't know, I know we've talked about it, would be two things that you guys are getting a chance to look at today. Obviously, how things will shake out between the Titans backs, but how about the Tampa Bay backfield? You know, Dirk Cutter's like, hey, Peyton Barber's our starter, but Ronald Jones, they drafted, I believe, in the second round. He's got a ton of ability, scored in the first preseason game, but he's kind of like, hey, pump your brakes on him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We've had those discussions already. I believe okay. Ronald
it,
Jones.
It sounded, what we have gleaned from our Tampa Bay perspective was that they still are going to be pass heavy, right? They want to be more efficient running the ball, but not
even
necessarily
early in the year. Even early in the year.
Well, early in the year, I think is a different deal. The first three games, right? But I did get a sense that Jones is the guy that is the most intriguing.
Here's the nugget we got today. A lot of people are trying to figure out Howard or Brate. Today we were told Howard.
The thing is there's so many tight ends that like when you have these guys that are in a split, it's kind of because there are, you know, what I mean, again, how many teams in your league? 12?
12.
Or 10?
12.
Yeah, 12-team league. Like there's always – once you get past that top tier of guys, like, you know, Kelsey and
Gronk, yeah.
You know – there just is a slew of other players after that, you know, where, you know, now all of a sudden you're like, drafting a guy that's kind of like, it could be him this week, could be Howard this week, could be Brate the next week. I think that the thing there is like, Peyton Barber is probably a better player than people realize, but they drafted Ronald Jones for a reason, high, and he's a really good player. Like that to me is one of those that could be very interesting. And I think that offensive line has gotten a little bit better, you know, over the last couple of years.
Speaking of drafting, the Smyrna Braves were drafted this past Sunday. We have our first practice tomorrow, Tim. Just wanted to keep
you
posted on that.
Well, listen. First tackle football game tonight. We don't know. There's a lot of unknowns. Well, you guys are talking about the rain. We haven't had a single practice in the rain. Like, how do we know if our center and quarterback can operate in the rain? How do we know? Like, how do you know?
You're about to find out.
I mean, it is a chance it's a 12-turnover game. Like,
So who's in charge of toweling off the ball? That's going to be the key if there is rain, right? You got to get the
– I think that's Steve Hutchinson's job. Okay?
There you go.
There you go. Future Hall of Famer, cowboy. Okay.
We'll get an update next week. Thanks for doing this as always.
All right, see you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. Always enjoy our visits with him. We'll come back, get a Chiefs preview. That's next on 102.5 The Game. We wrapped up the AFC North yesterday with the Steelers. Today we begin the AFC West. Learn a little bit about the Chiefs, team the Titans saw last year in the first round of the playoffs. The Titans came back and won in the second half. Carrington Harrison is on the line with us, 610 Sports in Kansas City. Harrison, how you doing? Or Carrington?
Hey, I just want to,
excuse me.
No, I appreciate it. First off, I just want to say relax. We don't talk about that playoff game here in Kansas City. We don't talk about arguably maybe the worst call I've ever seen in my entire life, the forward progress when Derek Johnson clearly caused a fumble on Marcus Mariota that was deemed not a fumble. We don't really talk about that here that much.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
I forgot. What happened?
Well, let's start there since we kind of just accidentally went there. I think Andy Reid is a Hall of Fame coach. I think he's a tremendous regular season coach. He has had his woes in the playoffs. Is that discussed there at all? I mean, he keeps putting together really good regular seasons and keeps falling short, sometimes way too early in the playoffs.
Oddly enough, most of the blame on the postseason failures have either been the defense and what happened in the game against Indianapolis. They had another epic collapse against Andrew Luck on the road at Indianapolis. He didn't really catch too much flack for that because the offense played incredibly well. They just couldn't get any kind of stops, and the injuries just kind of started to pile up. The blame, at least for the Titans game, has really gone to the call that we just were kind of joking about a little bit, and more on Alex Smith. If you guys remember in that game, Travis Kelce got injured, and the offense just couldn't really do anything. And I think more than anything, there's so much optimism around Patrick Mahomes this season that Andy Reid, not that he has gotten away with anything or he hasn't really faced a lot of criticism, but there's so much optimism built in Andy Reid and his ability to coach up quarterbacks, and the Chiefs for the first time since 1983 drafted a quarterback in the first round.
It's interesting. Derek Mason, who's on our morning show, spent 16 years in the NFL as a star receiver. I remember him on the show with us last year when they drafted Mahomes. He said, just he gave us the fantasy tip. He's in our fantasy league, and we didn't listen to him. He said, Alex Smith is going to have a monster year. And, of course, Alex Smith had his career year with Mahomes sitting there lurking in the background. Alex Smith is out of the picture. He's off to Washington. What's realistic for Mahomes? Obviously, they're all in on this kid. He is their future. But what's realistic for this year?
That's a really good question because I think it's a little bit of the – it's kind of like Chiefs fans have their first real girlfriend where you guys remember that you thought that was the one you're going to be with for forever, and then someone told you that's not how relationships normally work. Like, you aren't Corey and Topanga. You're not going to be with that person for the rest of your life. So, like Chiefs fans, because it's the first time they've been in this situation, I mean, we're talking here in Kansas City. Like, we play this game, like, would you rather? Like, would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or quarterback X? Like, the general consensus was, like, Mahomes was, like, top eight in the NFL of quarterbacks you would have. So Chiefs fans are just really, really optimistic. But I think more than anything, Chiefs fans are really optimistic about Andy Reid. I heard a stat. I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast, and he had Matthew Berry on, that if you add up the fantasy scores of every Andy Reid quarterback for the last 12 seasons, Andy Reid quarterbacks would be the fifth best fantasy quarterback in the NFL over the last 12 years. So Andy Reid, I think, just has an ability to maximize the quarterback position. And, I mean, it'd be really hard to mess up at quarterback with how much talent the Chiefs have offensively. You've got Kareem Hunt, who led the NFL in rushing last year. You've got Tyreek Hill, who might be one of the five most explosive players in the league. You have Travis Kelce, who a lot of people think is the best tight end in the NFL. And you have Sammy Watkins. So, I mean, Case Keenum could be a good quarterback for this team. So I think when you factor in coach and situation, that leads to a lot of people's optimism about Patrick Mahomes.
We were talking fantasy yesterday on the show, and you mentioned Travis Kelce. When he's established, so you have a body of work. I always get nervous. Like, for example, the two guys that you just mentioned, Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill. Alvin Kamara last year exploded in New Orleans, and now his fantasy value is explosion. And I always worry because there isn't that body of work. Like, Travis Kelce, we know what he is. He is a stud tight end in the league. Like, you know what you're getting out of him. The question is, I always wonder, which of these guys can always follow up that monster year at the beginning of their careers with yet again another monster year? What would you say to that about Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill?
With Tyreek Hill, I don't really have the questions. I mean, I don't say this as someone who is a homer. I don't really consider myself that. I think there are very few people in the NFL that you think can score every time they touch the football. Like, there's obviously a lot of great players in the league. There aren't many guys you feel like can score every time they touch it, and Tyreek Hill is in that category. Like, if you're talking about, like, legitimate matchup nightmares in the NFL, I think that Tyreek Hill is one of them. And with Andy Reid's scheme and his offense and about finding guys in space and with there being so many weapons, I'm not as worried about a guy like Tyreek Hill. I would be a little bit worried about Kareem Hunt, not saying that he's not going to have a good season, but go back and look at the first six games for Kareem Hunt. I mean, it'd be hard to have a better start to your NFL career than Kareem Hunt did the first six games. That even he could be good this year, but not as good as those first six games that are just going to knock the numbers down a little bit. And when you add somebody like Sammy Watkins, he's going to get targets, he's going to get yards. That's going to drastically change the offense. I'm not saying I would stay away from Kareem Hunt, but I think if you're looking at fantasy running backs, there's some other opportunities, other situations I would lead myself to first.
I'm just really fascinated with the conversation about Patrick Mahomes because of the build up for a year. And I guess we went through it here last for Jake Locker, where it's inevitable that he is going to take over. So how has it been covering? Do you think the coverage has been fair about it? Overhyped? How do you try to control those things as you discuss what is the story about a team that's been really steady for a long time and now trying to go to another level? Because a lot of times when a guy like him takes over, it's for a team that hasn't won for a while. But the Chiefs have been pretty good, and now they're just trying to get better with him.
That's a really good point. Actually, on the show, I've kind of got the moniker over the summer of Buzz Killington because I've kind of been the one person that's like
Buzz
realistic.
Killington?
Yeah, Buzz Killington about Patrick Mahomes because, and I mean, maybe some of it's like kind of egg the listeners on. Like, I'll just find stats to maybe kind of go with what you're saying. Like, I think we all know how risky it is to draft a quarterback in the first round and the bust rate that every team that drafts a quarterback in the first round thinks that guy's the answer. Like, Buffalo thinks Josh Allen is the answer. Arizona thinks Josh Rosen is the answer. You wouldn't spend the capital that you spend, but we know that somebody is going to get it wrong. Like, it's possible for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to get it wrong. There was a stat I gave over the summer that still, like, no one believes. There has not been a quarterback who played in the Big 12 that has won a playoff game. Think about that. The history of the Big 12 that's been around since 1996, there has not been one quarterback drafted from the Big 12 that has won an NFL playoff game. Why
wow.
is that? That's a really good question. Like, no one can really answer it. So a lot of people think Mahomes can be the first. Like, we'll just see. But, I mean, that's 20 years of data of not being able to do it. That I just think, like anything, there are always, like, there's always the other side of the argument. There's an other side of the argument with Mahomes. And like most people, like, Chiefs fans just don't want to hear it right now.
What's the biggest question mark on defense for them?
Everything.
When the answer starts with laughter, that's a uh-oh.
Because honestly, let's give it from the Tennessee perspective, right, the Nashville perspective. The performance by Derrick Henry in that playoff game really gave everybody a lot of hope. I mean, if he had had a bad game in that game and they hadn't won, I think there'd be major question marks about the direction of his career. But he had a really good game. But that was a big issue with the Chiefs defense, was it not?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's why I laugh, because you say, I mean, I don't know if this team can defend the pass or the run. So, like, it's kind of hard to really pencil in, like, what I'm worried most about. You bring up the Derrick Henry. They got a new general manager, Brett Veach, that kind of transitioned from last year. From the game against the Tennessee Titans, there are going to be 9 new starters on defense that actually started in the playoff game week 1 for the Kansas City Chiefs. So it was a major overhaul on defense. And, I mean, this team, think about this, their first 6 draft picks this year were all on defense. So it was a concerted effort to go out there and drastically change the defense, because the last 2 years, at least the perception here locally, was they lost because of the run defense. Whether it was Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh 2 years ago or Derrick Henry in Tennessee last season, and pass defense-wise, the Chiefs, to me, are trying to do a very dangerous formula. They have a very shaky pass rush, and they have a very shaky secondary. That normally doesn't equal having a good defense. I think in Kansas City, everybody agrees on probably 2 things. Everybody thinks they're going to be able to score, no one thinks they're going to be able to stop the other team from scoring this season.
Mm. Well, the good news is they get to ease into the NFL schedule at Los Angeles against the Chargers, at Pittsburgh against the Steelers.
No, I mean this team's first six games
are ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really have a more difficult start to the season. I think they play four on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four of their first six games are on the road, and I think four of them are against playoff teams, and one of them is like at Denver, which certainly isn't an easy place to play. Then you play San Francisco, who could be a lot better. I mean, they get off to a very difficult start. Yeah, Jacksonville's a good team. They get off to a very difficult stretch at the beginning, but second half of the schedule kind of lightens up. But I'm just a firm believer of the NFL that right now, even on your show, take six teams you think are going to be really good this year. Two of them will be bad. Just that's how the NFL
that
works.
That is how it works. Every single year. I wish we had tapes. Maybe we don't want to hear it, but pick a year, 2009. Oh, I guarantee you that happened.
Well, the best is just doing what we're doing, evaluating the schedule. Oh, that's a win. Oh, that's a loss. That'll be tough. That's a win. It's silly because by the time those games roll around, you never know what's happened, injuries, and it just always looks totally different in the NFL. Carrington, really appreciate the visit. Good stuff.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today, guys.
Carrington Harrison, 610 Sports in Kansas City, getting you a little Chiefs flavor. We'll come back, and in the third hour, don't forget Titans GM John Robinson and Titans running back Derrick Henry, who we were just talking about. That'll be in the third hour of Darren and Donick. We'll be back to wrap up the second hour next. Brant Snedeker on fire today. His day's already done. But what a day it was for Sneds.
A massive round. A 59 today. The Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, I get it. You know, the week after a major event usually is not getting the big spotlight. But 59. And there's a lot of people tweeting about just how historic this is. He's only the ninth player in the PGA Tour history. Darren, how long has the PGA Tour been around? It's been around a while.
More than a decade.
It's been around a good while. Only the ninth player in PGA Tour history to shoot a 59 or better, and the first to do so after starting the round with a bogey. So he bogeyed the first hole and then comes back with a 59. It's the fourth sub-60 score in the last 3 years, matching the number on tour in the previous 24 years. That's a pretty exclusive club. That's from ESPN Stats and Info. So congratulations to Brant. Great to see. So right now, of course, the round is still going on. So he's 11 under with the 59. He's got a 5-stroke lead after one day. A lot of people haven't finished or haven't teed off yet, but way to go. You ever shot a 59?
Putt-putt. Certainly not on a legitimate golf course.
That would be terrible, putt-putt.
I used to be pretty good at putt-putt.
What do you mean you used to be?
I'm talking about a real putt-putt.
How did you lose your putt-putt edge?
I'm talking about a real putt-putt where...
A real putt-putt?
Well, there's the official trademark putt-putt, and then there's miniature golf. There's a wide range, right?
Okay.
There's some miniature golf where it's just fun. You know, you have the windmill and the animals and the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And there was one called Pirate's Cove when I was growing up in Orlando. And it looked great. It was real scenic, but there was no strategy. You just whack the ball and just hope, right? Real putt-putt that I grew up where my mom grew up, my grandparents live in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and they had a real putt-putt. So people were serious about it. We used to go there every summer, and we would play a lot. And it was an art form. It was like real putting. Like, hit it off of this wall, right about this far away from the end of the bank. Bank it here, go here, and it will go in. Like, see how many times you can ace. Like, the hole's in one. How many, like, par is two on every hole. So how many under par can you get? And there were tournaments. There was like play all night kind of nights. And you would see some people come in like with real putters and like real golf players trying to score big in the putt fight.
Kind of like people who come into a bar with their own darts. Same deal. A case of darts.
Same exact concept. Same exact concept. Serious dart players. You see people come in with their own darts, you know you're in trouble. If you see people come in like with their own putter, and they're not using like the plastic red right. or you know whatever color ball you want, if they're coming in with like a real golf ball, you know these are serious putt-putt guys.
Their own
That's
bowling ball.
Yeah. Your own bowling There's ball. Another.
Although I do that. Preds gave me a very nice bowling ball, so I use this.
It's perk of the you know yeah. participating in the Preds and Pins.
Oh, they gave him one. But the people who got him spend their own money.
Right. Put their names on it.
Yeah.
In the bag.
And they're shining it. Doing well, the whole deal back and forth.
Honestly, when we went to
Mookie's, Betts, maybe
oh
that
my
guy.
Goodness. We went to Mookie's charity bowling tournament with his mom, Diana, and they are not messing around in there.
No.
They've all got the ball.
But they're legit bowlers.
They are legit.
Yeah, they're off legit. The charts bowlers. When you bowl 300s,
yeah.
then you do not – you can do whatever you want, right? Like, you cannot be hazed for having a bowling ball with your name on it in a bag.
Right, if you can back it up.
Right, if you can back it up, then you're yeah, no fall into that category.
The worst is when you have all that and you're not very good.
Right.
Remember that one time I jumped into a game with some of those guys, Darren, and I felt like if I don't throw some strikes here, it's just going to look bad. Like, I felt like I played better just because I was playing with all these people that – like, they were mad if they got a spare. If they left a pin, they're like, oh, man.
Who won Preds and Pins last year? My group.
Yeah.
Me.
You were on a very good team.
Right.
It wasn't because of you.
I know that feeling. Like, oh, my gosh. They're all yeah. going to bowl 250.
You got to pull your weight.
Yes. Like, there was real pressure. You're like, how can there be pressure? Your team was going to win.
But did you bowl better because of them? Or worse, because I was on a golf scramble one time with some guys at David Weather's tournament, and they were there to win it, and I was awful. It's the worst I've ever played.
It's the worst feeling too, right?
I don't
like you know, like you're so embarrassed.
Yeah, like
you
in a scramble,
nothing to do with it.
Right. In a scramble, usually, if I'm my normal self, I'll hit a few shots. I might hit 4 or 5 drives that they might use in 18 holes. Mm-hmm. Maybe, depending on how good the team
yeah.
is. Maybe at least 2 or 3. And maybe you make a putt here or there, get lucky on a chip or something. Or maybe you smack a fairway wood that goes, I was awful. And these guys were like, just hit your shot. You go ahead and go first, and then we'll get to the real deal. But it could go either way, right? Sometimes you play better when you're with better players, and sometimes you get nervous and you just completely self-destruct.
I know the feeling. I know what you're talking about.
So did you pull your weight for your championship in the present pins?
I think the honest answer is it really didn't matter what I did. We were going to win. That's how good they were.
If you bowled like a 67, you still would have won? Like it,
yeah, I guess you're – I mean, I think I bowled like a 140, 150.
That's respectable.
It's okay.
You're not pulling the group down.
No,
that.
It was okay. I think it was a 140, 150, somewhere in that range. So that's not bad.
That's solid.
That's really, for me, that's what I am. I'd like to say I'm better. Have I bowled a 160-something or 170? Yeah. But that's not me on average. I'm probably more in the one right around 140, which is not great. So
but
I didn't embarrass myself.
Yeah,
if that's what you're asking.
When you're going double digits,
if I went 8 gutters, then that's embarrassing yourself.
Well, if you get less than about, I mean, 100 is really the threshold, right?
Especially for an adult,
it's like a pitcher that walks out there and on the big scoreboard, it's a 5 ERA. That's that.
Like Chase flirts with maybe 100. Like that's how bad
want,
he is.
Yeah,
like
you
he
want
flirts
that.
With 100.
That's not good.
Like he can bowl like an 80 or 90.
Or when you come up there and your batting average is 176, it just doesn't look good.
And you're an everyday player in the bigs.
Yeah. If you're bowling 76 or 78, that's noticeable. It's noticeable.
It's trash.
Yeah.
It's very much trash.
It's noticeable.
We will come back.
Sticks out like a sore thumb.
We'll see if they are wrapping things up out at St. Thomas Sports Park. And we should hear from Titans GM John Robinson, also Titans running back Derrick Henry, and head coach Mike Vrabel. All that coming up in the third hour of Darren and Donick. That's next.